We cannot afford to invest into our pain and the disparity. We have to invest into our hope.
Mid-South Viewpoint, a Christian news and information feature of Bot Radio Network 640 AM, discussing the news, views, issues, and concerns that affect our community. Join us now for today's edition of Mid-South Viewpoint.
In 1994, at least 1,117,000 innocent people were massacred in a horrible genocide in Rwanda, my homeland in Central Africa. We are still finding bodies buried in pits, dumped in rivers, chopped in pieces. Those are the words from Bishop John Ruchihana. The bishop is here in the United States right now. He's been traveling, speaking, sharing his story. Many of you know the genocide story, the massacre, the horrible things that have taken place in Rwanda. But through Jesus Christ, there is hope. Through Jesus Christ, life is being restored. People are finding reconciliation. People are finding forgiveness. People are finding hope. Today, we have the privilege here on Bot Radio Network to welcome to our program Bishop John Ruchihana, the Bishop of Sierra Diocese of the Anglican Church, located in North Providence of Rwanda. Bishop John, God bless you, my friend. Thank you for coming and sharing with us today.
God bless you, too. It's a joy to be with you.
Now, you right now are in Little Rock, Arkansas, I believe, and you've been speaking there.
Yes, I have, and not only Arkansas, but I have been in different places also of the country.
And this is not your first time. You've actually have spent some time here in Memphis before.
Yes, I have, and I have been coming in the country to share, to speak, and to teach, and to tell what God is doing in Rwanda.
Bishop, you grew up, of course, in Rwanda. Is that correct?
Yes, I am. I'm Rwandan, born in Rwanda, in the northern province of Rwanda, and a beautiful area of the country. In 1959, my parents left the country for Uganda. I left the country in 1962 because of the persecution, and actually the beginning of the ethnic persecution, degradation, and I became a refugee for many years in Uganda, where Christ received me and saved me and used me in refugee camps as a teacher, community development officer, and eventually a priest until I came back to Rwanda after the genocide.
Bishop John, I'd like for you to describe, if you will, what was home like for as a little child growing up as a young boy in Rwanda with your mother and father. Of course, you said you left. At what age did you leave Rwanda?
14.
Take us back to maybe the time you were 7 or 8 years old. Was life okay at that time?
Life was wonderful, and the expectation and ambitions were very high in Rwanda, and nobody knew it was going to turn into a violent nation because of the political environment. When the people requested for independence from the Belgians, then they started overturning against them, and the whole situation became sour, and the whole cloud became dark instantly, and nobody expected that in life.
What kind of work did your father do during those early years?
My father was working for Belgians, and he was one of the community leaders.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
I have one brother living. Four of our brothers died, and we are two brothers and we have sisters.
You were one of, I'm sure, many that were able to leave Rwanda because of the persecution. What types of persecution were you experiencing that would make you leave your country?
Well, most of the persecution was actually more or less like creating like what the Second World War produced in Germany for the Holocaust, was burning homes and getting people, hiding them into trucks, and taking them into the forest of the south, where there was tsetse fly, which bites people and causes sleeping sickness, which was basically depriving people of their productivity, their land, stripping them of their rights. And that led to the worst genocide, exodus of refugees, worst in Africa, that thousands of people left Rwanda to Uganda, to Congo, to Burundi, and Tanzania. And between 59 and 62, we lost 300,000 people.
At the age of 14, your family left Rwanda, exiled to where?
We went into Uganda, then went to Congo for about 2 years. They settled, but Congo had to turn into chaos.
If you're talking about areas that we all know that have been quite unstable, I mean, even in Uganda during the reign of Idi Amin.
Yes. Uganda, Congo had to turn, then most of the Rwandese refugees, part of it were in proximity of the Ugandan borders, went into Uganda again. In 1971 to 79, Idi Amin overtook the power, staged a coup d'etat against Milton Obote. Amin killed very many thousands in the Uganda as well. So the violence in Africa has been part of the experience we have grown to live through.
You know, Bishop, we have a dear pastor friend of our Bot Radio Network family here. His name is Pastor Francis Sebakindu. He's from Uganda. He was persecuted during Idi Amin's reign, and it was by God's providence that he was brought to the United States, trained in seminary. 23 years ago, God challenged him. He came to Memphis to start an inner-city church where he has been ever since, helping the poor, helping people in our community, having had experienced the persecution like you're talking about.
Well, that's the situation. Actually, Idi Amin killed a lot of people in Uganda at that time. I lived through that regime.
Now, how many years were you in exile?
Well, since 1962 through 1997, when my family returned to Rwanda to pick pieces, all that time was in exile.
Now, while your family was in exile, Bishop John, the news and the stories and reports, what did that do to you as knowing that your homeland was in such chaos?
Well, usually when you become a refugee of violence, you run away because you fear death. Because when somebody comes with a spear and a machete and under the supervision of a Belgian commando, you certainly run for your life and leave your property to be plundered. That's saving life. That's the whole thing.
And you left everything.
Literally everything, from the movable property to unmovable property, the land, the house, everything that you own, you leave and run for to save your own life.
Bishop, we talk about change of government, or maybe the heart of the government changes. As you mentioned, in the early years, that things were very peaceful. It looked very promising for your homeland, Rwanda. And yet something changed in the heart of the government.
At that time, actually, it's not even the Rwandan government, because there was no Rwandan government at that time. We were under the colonial rule. The king then, who got actually murdered at the time, by the Belgian rule, the king and some of his political party members and the population in that, which was a top cream of the society at that time, they requested for independence from the UN, because Rwanda was formerly the colony of Germany, and in the First World War, Germany lost its colonies in Africa. And then the UN reallocated these colonies as a protectorate to other European countries. So Rwanda and Burundi were reallocated to Belgium, and Tanzania was reallocated to Great Britain. So then when they asked for independence from Belgium, then the Belgian commanders and the Belgian administration then staged the persecution on the king and those who supported him seeking independence as a punitive measure. But it went out of their control, and then they eventually wanted to make it sound to the UN as the Hutu Revolution. Then they attributed it to the Hutus. But basically, our violence and our persecution was staged by the colonial Belgium. Then they attributed it to the Hutu Revolution.
Bishop, what influence or power did the Church of Jesus Christ have at that time?
Well, at that time, there was not a single contribution to making it better, because at that time, the Catholic Church, which was the most powerful church then, was the state church. As it were, in Europe, the Catholic Church in Belgium, in Holland, in Germany, in many other, that church was a state church. Maybe not in Germany at that time, but it was a state church in some parts of the country. France, I think Belgium, Holland, and some other places. The Catholic Church remained, and of course in Italy, at a certain point until Vatican became a state of its own. The Catholic Church has remained the powerful, influential, government-related church, and so it was in Rwanda. So the policies that led to the persecution was nothing strange to the Catholic Church at that moment, which was the church in power.
Bishop, the church at that time was not able to do anything to divert this type of hatred in the government, I guess.
No, it wasn't, because when you are part of a policy, you cannot oppose it in action. You see, when you are part of a policy, you have no more energy left, and you have no muscle left to oppose it when it gets into action.
That's a very powerful lesson for us here in the Church of America, isn't it?
Yes, certainly. Not only the church in America, it's a lesson to the church everywhere in the world. It's not only 1959 that the church was not able to do something. At least some churches in 1959 were able to host people and transition them from persecution to their refugee areas and help them get out and escape and go alive. But in a genocide, it wasn't even that powerful to shelter a transition, a safe transition from persecution to being a refugee somewhere in safety.
Bishop John, take us back to that refugee camp when you first went into the live as a young boy, a teenage boy, 14 years old. What was life like in the refugee camp? Did you have enough food to eat? How were you treated?
Well, even worse than food to eat, but being a refugee is being uprooted completely, have no rights whatsoever, just to be languished, to be there, to have no ambition. But even food wasn't there. No provision was scarce, and people were trying to wander around the villages and near the refugee camps to work for a day meal, a whole day to get a day meal or be able to feed the family for those who had families.
What impact did your faith in Jesus Christ through this process while you were a refugee, while you were in exile away from your homeland, Rwanda? What help did your relationship in Jesus Christ have through this time, Bishop?
Well, of course, you can't be helped by being a refugee to be a Christian. It's by the grace of God that Jesus touched me and restored my hope and gave me a refocus on life, and all that. Even outside your country, even in a refugee camp, God can make sense of disparity. But it's not that refugee camp life, deprivation of rights and dignity, it makes you a Christian. It's the other way around. When you are out in it, that makes you even hate yourself and hate God. But it's by the grace of God that God in Jesus Christ and through the power of His Spirit drew me into this grace realization to know that Jesus is much more powerful than the disparity and the state of a refugee, and can redeem me, and surrendered to Him.
Now, of course, your family was able to go into exile and to leave Rwanda to the refugee camp, but there was many that stayed behind. How come they couldn't leave like you were able to?
Well, some of them weren't at that time in areas where they could have exit from the country. That's one of it. We were living by closer to the border, whereby we could make it a night journey from Rwanda and get to the border of Congo, or get into the jungles of Congo covered by the dark of the night. Others were in the interior of the country. They control have afforded to go away. The circumstances were different from every part of the country to another. So some of the people caught themselves in between the conditions they were in. Not every single day was a day of harassment. There were sometimes when they come in the country, you can resettle again, you can go back, you can rebuild your homes, and they put sheds up together for you to stay. So things happened. Then after a number of years, they would break again into violence, like it were in the 60s, broke again into 72, 73, there was a persecution. Thousands of people died in Rwanda. In 1980, there was another wave of killings until finally they did the genocide in 94.
And this is where you say over 1 million people were massacred.
Yes, sir.
Now, for 38 years, you were in exile.
I've been in exile, yes.
Right. What were the signs that you felt like you were able to return safely somewhat, I guess, to Rwanda?
Well, I think not really that maybe the signs of peace, but more of the signs of calling, because the genocide actually broke when I was in the United States in 1994, and I was in the middle of my preaching missions and teaching when I saw on CNN the floating of the dead bodies and the glimpse of the killings on the CNN, and decided to cut my mission short and went back to Rwanda. Had a survey of what had been done to the people, went from the northeast, south, central, and saw for myself the dead bodies loitering all over the country in mass graves. So I felt God calling me to go in and help others to make things happen again and to pick the pieces.
So there were still killings going on when you returned in 1994?
Yes, there was fighting still going on into the southwest of Rwanda. That's when I went to visit. There was still fighting, trying to overthrow the government, which was doing the genocide.
Bishop, break down the geographical makeup of Rwanda. You mentioned that you were from the northern province.
Rwanda is a country of 1,000 hills, as they call us. Or some people call us the Switzerland of Africa. We have mountains in the volcanic mountains. We are the home of the gorillas in the mist, or mountain gorillas. It's a very beautiful area in the north and the west of Rwanda, and mountains, big mountains. And the south has small mountains. The east is a plain. Very good plan, and very, very pleasant to see. So the whole country actually is very touristic, with the good lakes and rivers, and it's a very beautiful country.
What would the agriculture be? What type of food product would be one of the main sources that is grown there?
Well, the cash crops we have today and selling in the market is coffee and tea. We make very good tea and a good coffee. We have also other seasonal crops that can get into the market. If only we could be able to process, have the mechanized approach to agriculture, we could process some of other crops into the market.
How did you handle personally, Bishop John, the horror of all the remains, the body remains of your brothers and sisters from your homeland? You go back and you see that over 1 million people have been massacred. How did that affect you emotionally? How did you deal with that?
Well, it's very hard emotionally, and unless you are not a human being, it's a lot of emotional depressing. But one thing is that the Lord, and by the grace of the Lord, it inspired in me the will to do something, the will to reach my people, to challenge them to rediscover who they are and to pick pieces, whether the group which suffered persecution and lost their beloved ones in a genocide, or those who actually participated into the killings, all of us were being challenged equally by the Lord Jesus Christ to be able to rediscover who we are, repent, and be ashamed of, take responsibility of our loss and our killings and our miseries, and then be able to reconcile ourselves to ourselves, reconcile ourselves to God, reconcile ourselves to each other, and be able to see the immediate need of making a nation again. Because we cannot afford to invest into our pain and the disparity. We have to invest into our hope.
I can't imagine the pain of seeing, of course, your family members. How many family members did you lose personally as a result of this massacre?
Well, we have lost. My niece actually was murdered a day. She left my house. We have lost cousins, and my wife lost cousins and the other extended relatives. It's harder to get to the number. But whether the number is small or great, the grief of a human being remains the same. And the emotional drain remains the same. The grief is the grief. And more so, it's not the grief, it's the imagination of what it makes you and it does to you after losing people to injustice, unfairness, and the genocide.
Bishop John, you married your wife back in 1969. How did you meet?
We met in the refugee camp. And more so, we met more closely in a church we belonged to.
Now, you have five children. God's given you Grace, Patrick, Hope, Joy, and Andrew. Tell me about your family.
We have a blessed family. Grace, our firstborn daughter, is married, and she has a beautiful four children, three girls and one boy. And our second man, Patrick, the other name called Love Rukundo, is in Rwanda working with Bridge to Rwanda. And our third-born Hope girl is a respiratory therapist, and she's getting married this coming 18th of December. Our fourth-born girl, Joy, is in Rwanda, married with a baby girl. And our last-born, Andrew, is in Rwanda as well. And we adopted another four, and they are all grown-ups. So we raised nine children.
So you adopted four children?
Yes, we did. And God has blessed us through with them because all of them are now adults on their own.
Bishop, you've written a book back in 2007. It's called The Bishop of Rwanda,
yes.
Finding Forgiveness Amidst a Pile of Bones.
Yes.
I guess it was difficult for you to write that book.
Yes, it was, but I felt I had the duty to let the world know the truth of what happened to us. And that's why the book, to some people, they say they love my book. They love to read it, to get the truth of it. But some say, oh, boy, it was a hard read.
One of the things I picked up in your book, I was reading some of the chapters, and one of the things that was used for the military troops was the radio to communicate where other troops would need it to go and to kill all of these innocent people. Even in churches were raided and innocent people were killed. And I was just thinking, Bishop, right now you and I are talking on the radio. We're talking, sharing grace, forgiveness, love. We're lifting up the name of Jesus Christ as we speak together today. But a radio was used in your homeland to communicate terror, horror, and destruction.
Yes, sir. It was, unfortunately. Instead of propagating peace and the love, they used it to encourage the public to kill and to tell people where they should be going to look for hidden people so that they can get them out of hiding and kill them.
You mentioned a moment ago, Bishop, that God had really spoken to your heart about going back to Rwanda, as you mentioned, to start ministries to help to rebuild, to help people to reconcile their relationship with each other, to reconcile relationship with God, to find forgiveness, to find healing. I know you have been involved in a lot of aspects of ministry. You mentioned just a moment ago the ministry Bridge to Rwanda. We don't have any more time to continue. I would like to invite you to come back on our program next time and continue talking about the current ministry that you have there in Rwanda.
Okay, sir. Next time, you are welcome.
Friends, we're going to say goodbye at this time. I hope you'll join us on our next Mid-South Viewpoint program. Again, our guest today has been Bishop John Ruchihana, sharing his story today. He's written the book called The Bishop of Rwanda, Finding Forgiveness Amidst a Pile of Bones, and it's available on Amazon.com. Bishop, God bless you. Thank you so much for being here on this program, and we look forward to sharing more with our friends here on Bot Radio Network the next time.
God bless you. Talk to you later.
Friends, that's all the time we have on this edition of Mid-South Viewpoint. I'm Byron Tyler. Thanks for stopping by. Bye-bye now.
Thanks for listening to Mid-South Viewpoint. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can email us. Our address is wcrv@botradionetwork.com. This has been Mid-South Viewpoint, another Christian news and information feature from Bot Radio Network 640 AM.